in the hands of a man that she kissed on the train. And the children have all gone into town to get candy, and we are alone in the house here.
Stud CITR 101.9 FM. It's me, Robin Cullen will not be here, and Robin Fish will be joining us in a moment. I'm here speaking with Linda Medley. Are you there, Linda?
Yeah, I am.
Awesome. That was a soothing track to start out with.
I love that song.
Tom Waits always makes me want to drink for some reason, though.
Well, feel free.
If only I could drink in the booth. They have a beer fridge in the studio, but you can't bring the liquid into it.
It'd make for a very interesting hour.
It would. It would. I don't know if I would necessarily be any good at the show, but I'd have fun doing it. So you're on to talk about Castle Waiting, your new collection that just came out from Fantagraphics.
Right.
A collection of work that's been in the works for, I'm trying to scratch my head, for several years now, that you've kind of been piling away at putting this tome out.
Well, I actually started it the very first day that I started it was in 1994, so it's been around for a while. Yeah.
12 years in the making, then we'll see. Oh, here I am. Robin Fisher's joining us now. Hello, Robin Fisher.
Hello.
This is Robin Fisher's heavy breathing. She ran to get here after she passed it.
Oh. Okay, Robin.
Let me catch my breath.
Sorry about that, Linda.
I'm hoping Lisa will understand as she made the move herself a few years ago from New York to Portland.
Robin is moving to Montreal tomorrow from Vancouver.
Oh, God.
So today was the everything getting packed up and moved. So we're just starting to talk about that Castle Waiting originally started in 1994.
Uh-huh.
So 12 years in the making. And kind of get into that stuff.
Okay. I'm just going to catch my breath.
Okay.
How many miles is it from Vancouver to Montreal?
I have no idea, but it is literally on the other side of the country.
Wow.
It's a trek.
Yeah.
So you went like diagonal, but I'm just going like horizontal.
It's like there's time zone differences, but I think I moved through a few climate zones as well.
Well, I'm going from rainforest to freezing cold winter.
Man.
So it'll be good times. Anyways, about you. The show's about you.
So,
oh, what the? Who wants to know about me?
Well, we do. So, what was the impetus to start the Castle Waiting project?
You'd
been like, I know you were kind of slugging it out in the trenches of D.C.
Yeah,
that
well,
that
pretty
it?
Much is what it was. I got tired of doing the stuff that I was doing, and I think it was. I'm going to date myself, but I actually started working on my 30th birthday. And I think it's one of those things where it was just like I had outgrown working on the projects I was getting, and just thought I have to do something different. I have to do something that's going to hold my attention better. And I just needed to move on to writing my own stories, apparently.
I actually wanted to know how you got started at DC, because for me personally, like, I got into comics in a more alternative bent, and so the first thing I saw from you was Castle Waiting, which I loved. But then one time I was kind of digging through a bunch of old, like, JSAs and JLAs, and I found this piece done by Kyle Baker, was drawing, like, everybody at the DC bullpen, and you were, like, chained to a table with dark circles under your eyes, and I was like, oh my god, Linda Medley did superhero comics? So how did you get started with DC?
Yeah, actually, I did. I mean, back in the day, that was, let's see, I started, this 1989, I started working on Justice League, and I mean, back then, that was almost all, if you wanted to work in comics, you had to do superheroes, because, that's almost all there was.
That's the only way to make money.
Yeah, I mean, you could draw comics all day long.
So did you have, like, a portfolio that you shopped around to the cons, and then somebody was like, yeah, you can draw some Wonder Woman for us, that'd be great?
Almost exactly is how it happened. I had been doing children's books for a while, but had always wanted to do comics, and had just decided, well, if, you know, it's either now or never, try it. If you get rejected, you get rejected. If not, you know, you get a job. And had done some, there's kind of a long story behind it I'm not going to get into, but I did some sample pages of these characters that my brother and I had made up when we were kids, superheroes, and were basically all just derivatives of the Avengers. And did a bunch of sample pages of them, took them to a WonderCon in Oakland, and showed them to Kevin Dooley, who was the assistant editor at the time on Justice League, and he said, well, I'll show these around. And it's maybe about a month later, they contacted me and said, well, okay, you want to draw a book? And that was how I got the first job.
So the other question I had was that you were doing superhero comics in the late 80s, and off the top of my head, I can think of, like, Ramona Frandon, Jill Thompson, Louise Simonson, there, maybe, like, Ann Nocenti was writing some Marvel stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really remember a lot of females doing comic books, like, superhero comic books back then.
No, there wasn't. I think there was maybe about 12 of us at the time, and,
So, but you found you had no struggle trying to break into the medium. It was just like,
well, there was, I think for me there wasn't, but then I was, I don't know if I was just lucky or there was, I think kind of a push of to try and get more women working in the industry at the time. So I may have been in the right place at the right time, because I've heard it wasn't that easy for other people. Yeah, and then, of course, nowadays, you can do whatever you want,
yeah,
and that's great.
So then you went to D.C., did a bunch of superhero comics, and then you decided, oh, I've got to challenge myself, do something I can stick with for a while. And then you started
I kind of had been all around the board. I did work for D.C. I did. I had started work on a project that I so wish I would have been able to finish it. It was for Tundra. And it was called
Tundra.
Poor Tundra.
Oh, Tundra. It was called the Galactic Girl Guides, and it was with Michael Kaluta and Elaine Lee. And
oh, right.
It was fabulous.
You know, I think I've seen artwork
pictures,
from
drawings?
That.
Yeah,
it was a spinoff from Starstruck.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm a huge Kaluta fanatic. So.
That would have been so excellent. I bet that's residing in Dylan Horrocks' New Zealand town lighthouse that finished Galactic Girl Guides. Wow.
Yeah, it's one of those long lost. I mean, I still have pages from it, and I, you know, every once in a while will pull them out and sigh and then put them away again.
Do you think you might ever resurrect them?
It wouldn't be up to me, because
they
were Michael and Elaine's characters, and I don't know if they wanted to get back to doing it or not.
Well, when we talked to Kaluta, he's told me that the Starstruck was like his baby. It was his favorite thing that he'd ever worked on. I'm surprised he hasn't revisited it.
Well, I think
I love that book. I absolutely just, I love it. It's one of the, I don't know. I mean, I cried at the end.
It's fantastic writing, Miss Lee.
Yes.
Yeah, I think in 96 it went through some publisher difficulties that I think may have been one of those things that was very, you know, got screwed up so bad and you just don't want to worry about it.
Well, I hear that. I can understand that.
So what made you fixate on fairy tales? Because one of the things that I found kind of funny is the fact that within the past year or so, they've really made sort of a resurgence thanks to Bill Willingham's Fables. But you've been plugging away at this sort of genre for a really long time, and I was wondering if you were feeling just a little put out by the fact that everyone's into it now, and you know,
well,
there you've been.
I mean, I'm not going to get into the whole subject of Mr. Willingham and his business, but I don't know. I mean, I do know that I think it was Charlie Vess was saying once about how the whole thing of resurgence of myth and fable comes around the turn of the century of every century.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know if that's true or not, but it would be interesting if it is just sort of a cyclical trend that mm-hmm. there's, you know, renewed interest in, you know, what it is, what our mythology is. I also think there's a lot of, you know, pop culture trend. People look around and see what is becoming popular and, you know,
latch on.
Jump on the bandwagon. And
but what was it for you? What is it about the fairy tales that you knew that you could stick with it for a really long time?
Because there's so much that needs to be fixed in them. I mean, fairy tales and mythology is supposed to reflect what is going on in sort of the cultural, you know, cultural icons, cultural development. And you know, anyone can look at Cinderella and say, oh, that is not life. That's not that's not the way the world works anymore. It was the messages that were in Grimm's fairy tales, anything from that era was applicable to that era. They're not applicable anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole the icons of them, the, you know, everybody grew up knowing who Cinderella is. If you change that to, you know, something, a character or a situation that's, you know, says something to you about your life, it makes it a new part of a new mythology, really.
Well, yeah, it's easier to relate to.
Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, wouldn't it be great if I could quit scrubbing the floors for my evil stepmother and a prince would come and save me? Is that really going to happen in 2006? No.
Wow. maybe a common law guy might come along.
Yeah.
Well, you start out Castle Waiting with like really putting your stamp on the fairy tale with Sleeping Beauty going, okay, bye guys, I got my man.
Well, it's really funny because in literature, there's this really great book by a Canadian writer called Anne-Marie MacDonald called Goodnight, Juliet, Good Morning... No, Good Night, I can't speak today either. Desdemona, Good Morning, Juliet. And it was all about the same thing, right? Like how if Juliet didn't slaughter herself so unneedlessly, she would have realized how fickle Romeo was because he was constantly falling in love. And how, like, they don't really talk about how Desdemona was, like, a really strong woman and actually kind of got off on listening to her husband's, like, horrific tales of war, and that she wouldn't have gone so gently into the night, for example. So, that's one of the things I found really refreshing about your book is that you've made it a very adult kind of story, but not so much so that children can't relate to it. You know, you've definitely brought it into like to 2000, the fairy tale.
It takes a lot of, I mean, there's sometimes I have to stop and rethink, you know, well, because I had originally not planned for it to be an all ages book. I had planned for it to be kind of a little bit older. But when you're dealing with fairy tales, you're almost sure to get saying, oh, it's fairy tales, it's for children.
Yeah.
And people won't just look at it and say, oh, wait, there's a crucifixion in here. And there's, you know, other things that you may want to think twice about.
Not only a crucifixion, a bearded lady crucifixion.
Well, yeah.
The other thing, too, though,
it's something that that whole legend was considered reality for hundreds of years, mm-hmm. and was, you know, like told in Sunday school, and you kind of like, well, what is really appropriate? What is our idea of appropriate? And especially in regards to what was considered appropriate, not even 100 years ago.
I have a kind of a follow up from Colin. He had a couple of questions. One of them was usages of stuff, and kind of go along with the Christian thing is that the prominent use of the kind of the nunhood, I don't know what the right wording is.
The nunnery.
The nunneries. Is Catholicism, like, was that something you grew up with?
No, as a matter of fact, I was not raised religiously at all. My mom's explanation being that she was raised Catholic, and she had said, well, she wanted myself and my brothers to be able to choose what religion we wanted to be, if we did want at all, so we weren't raised religiously at all.
Way to go, Mom.
So then I, you know, get to have the fun of making up my own.
Be careful, you might fall into the Dave Sim trap.
Well, I think I'd have to jump off the deep end really, really hard to fall into the Dave Sim thing. But it's, yeah, I actually had to do some research to find out about some of the old Catholic, you know, mythology.
I was going to say, too, that one of the things about your book is it's funny how you mentioned that you were gearing it towards older audiences, but a lot of people just kind of seem to think that it's for children. I was going to say your art, it just makes children gravitate towards that art. Like, I teach in a daycare, and I've shown them the pictures from this book, and I have to stop them from picking up a crayon to color in my book, because your art is
perfectly
so,
okay. If they
exactly. I don't want them to ruin my book, but I buy issues and let them color, because your line work is so clean and precise. It's almost like, I don't want to say it's Disney-esque because it's not, but you know what I mean? It's almost like, I guess you could say, how Hergé does really clean line work too, mm-hmm. where you children just kind of want to color it in, and they want to know what the story is about because the characters are so well defined, and like, they have such great facial features and, you know, expressions.
Well, I think that's part of part of it is because I'm actually not a black and white artist. I was trained as a painter, and for years I was a colorist for DC too, doing different books. So I tend to always draw for color and not put in. I have to go back in after I've finished the pages and spot in blacks and try and make it look a little more three-dimensional. That's part of it. In fact, I'm always drawing for color, and it's like I sometimes think, well, maybe someday I'll get back in and, you know, color 500 pages.
Well, it gets
probably
to be
not likely,
expensive.
But
I would sure love to see more of your color work, though.
Yeah, well, I
because yeah, you did that awesome piece in the Comics Journal book. This what I think it was the summer special when they were talking about creativity.
Oh, and the dead whale story.
Yeah, it was actually really brilliant when you want to try to explain to somebody about like imagination and creativity in comics. But yeah, that was the first time I'd seen your color work besides some of the covers, and oh, I wish you would do more color.
Well, I'm actually working on something now that hopefully, if I can ever get it done, it will be painted. So,
can you tell us a little bit about it? Or do you not want to jinx it?
Well, it's actually because I stopped doing Castle Waiting for, 4 years? 3 years?
Yeah, I was waiting a long time.
I kind of, it's sort of like to get over mm-hmm. doing Castle Waiting, I decided I was going to, you know, work on some other projects that I had wanted to do for a long time. And one of them being I want to do stories from The Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually have two series. I wrote two different series, and one of them takes place in Oz. The other one takes place, it's kind of, they go kind of hand in hand. One takes place in Oz, one takes place in Ev, which is the country kind of across the desert from Oz. And
well, just to clarify, is this like you're writing these stories, or are they adaptations?
No, I'm writing them.
Oh, okay. Wow.
It's kind of like it's sort of like, at least in my mind anyway, I've taken it's sort of like I'm doing what I did to doing to Oz what I did to Fairy Tales with mm-hmm. Castle Waiting, kind of a thing. Expand on it and change some, get into the backgrounds of some of the characters. And
now are you afraid of any backlash, because you're dealing with some really, you know, solid pieces of children's literature, whereas the Grimm fairy tales have always been open to interpretation?
Yeah, and especially with the way I changed some of the characters, I know that there will no doubt be backlash if I, you know, ever can get the stories out. But I think it's something where, if you're not, how can I put this and not sound stupid? If you're not striving to challenge people's perceptions with your work, no matter what it is that you're doing, it's not worth doing it. Mm-hmm. You can't always play it safe. You have to try and you know, make people look at the world a little differently. And if they can do it through the filter of literature, before they have to deal with it in reality, I think that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I totally agree with you. Self-censorship is not the way to go. You start putting yourself on this treadmill that you can't get off.
Yeah.
So now I wanted to ask you, since you're working on this new project and you're finally coming out with new Castle Waiting stories, would you ever go back to superhero comics again?
Not unless somebody was willing to let me do it the way I do. The way I do my work. But the thing is, they've already done that. You know, they've already taken, you know, almost every superhero and gotten into their background and, you know, tried to deconstruct them. So it's sort of like, well, I want, there's just so much, there's so much deconstruction to be done in the world. I don't know if I'd go back to doing superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's too many, I don't know, there's so much, when you work for any of the corporations, there's so many, what's wrong with it? There's too many cooks spoiling the broth,
yeah,
kind of thing. There's too many people you have to try and please. And when you're doing stuff independent, you know, it's like, yeah, the mistakes are yours too, but you can do what you want. You can put your vision out as close to the way you wanted it as, you know, as you can.
Now, I have a curiosity of the history of Castle Waiting with the publishing. Mm-hmm. It was published by Fantagraphics. You self-published at one point, I think. Was it, who else was it?
Jeff Smith published it
in Cartoon Books.
Yeah.
Now that kind of like, was that trying to find like the right support area to like publish how you want it to be published, with going to Fantagraphics?
It was, I was trying to, Well, in Fantagraphics' case, it was their idea. They
three
wanted
three cheers for Fantagraphics.
Yeah, huh? Eric.
Yay!
Oh, they kind of, it was all them, because I didn't, as a matter of fact, Gary had been bugging me about it for 2-3 years, and I kept telling him no, I didn't want to do it again, and he's one of these people who won't take no for an answer.
That's why we love him.
So, it was, in their case, it was them pushing more than me, and but in the past, it's always been a struggle to get. I want to be doing any of my work. I want to be doing it regularly. I want to be doing it, you know, doing it every day. I want to be able to do it and not to have to take in side projects, or to be able to do it and not have to worry about. I mean, self-publishing is just, it's like committing suicide. If you're the one doing everything, which I am. Trying to switch gears from the, okay, you know, I'm the creative person now, and then switching gears to I have to pack up
orders.
Books and
yeah.
ship them out and get them to the post office. It's hard.
Now, here's a question. One thing I've noticed amongst the independent comic book scene is a lot of boys get their wives to do all that kind of work. And then
well,
they just
okay,
the
this is something I've always said, you know, it's not self-publishing, it's spousal publishing.
Mm-hmm.
You wrangle in whoever you can, you know.
And I, you know, it's weird because there's a lot of female cartoonists that don't do that. It seems that they're not getting their husbands to help them out, that they're just doing it all themselves. I mean, you look at Jill Thompson, and she's got a pretty famous husband who's doing his own thing. But she's been number one, like, for her books, she's been the only one doing everything for so long.
Mm-hmm. Well, but she's always had a publisher.
Mm-hmm. That's true, too.
You know, and that's kind of like, once you've got a publisher, you know, there's a lot of stuff you don't have to worry about. You don't have to promote. You don't have to. Plus, you got that paycheck
yeah.
coming in. And it probably helps to have a husband who's got the paycheck coming in,
yeah,
too.
That's true.
So it's kind of like everything is always down to you in the independence. And I would hope that people realize that by now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fans as well as the, I mean, anyone who's thinking of getting into doing an independent comic, it's like it's always down to you, and if you aren't, you know, if you aren't handling it, you're not handling it, and that's what I was faced with more than once. Was like, man, I cannot handle this. It's not something I can do entirely on my own.
Yeah, that's always what I tell my cartooning kids. It's like, if you want a career in comics, you have to have the love. If you don't have the love, then you're just going to be miserable.
If you don't have the love, you need the sugar daddy.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And some of us are still looking for that daddy. But some of us have, yeah, got on our own 2 feet and done it on our own. And it was really funny because when that hardcover book came out, I had no idea that Fantagraphics was harassing you to publish it. I was just patiently waiting for more stuff. Initially, I was kind of angry about the book because I was kind of like, well, I've been collecting for so long your solo issues. To have that book come out, it made me a little angry. But then when I read it all together, I was just kind of like, okay, I'm really glad this book exists because it filled in a lot of holes for me. For waiting for so long, I was getting kind of confused about who was what and what was happening and what was going on.
Yeah, well, and the thing is, I had always wanted to do the book just as novels, just do a series of novels. And so the way I had the story all planned out, you know, it's real difficult. It was really hard for me always to try and make the chapters episodic. It's like this all has to fit within one issue.
Yeah.
And more than once, it's like you start getting towards the end of the issue and there's more and more panels crammed on the page because I'm trying to get it all in there.
Little Chester Brown panels.
And it is, but it is something where it should ideally read better as a whole book than it would as individual issues.
Mm-hmm. Now, because Fantagraphics has been twisting your rubber arm to put this book out, I noticed that there's a new issue and previews coming out with, like, old stuff but some new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to continue doing new stuff? Do you have the fire in you to
well,
do more
the,
Castle
that was
Waiting?
The plan was to start, was to do, you know, have the collection come out. Or first it was just going to be just the collection. Then a few months later, we discussed it and it was like, well, okay, have the collection and then start the series again because it's not finished.
No, not at all.
there's like this whole epic.
Well, it's like you kind of got sidetracked. I'm like waiting for you to finish, and then all of a sudden, oh, cool, it's all about the bearded nun. That's awesome. And then, okay, when's she gonna finish? Oh, wait.
Well, that was, yeah, like I said, that was you know, Jeff Smith and his, you know, well, we need to have something to make people want to buy a new number one.
Oh, okay.
And
I'm going to assume that's why you didn't last very long at Cartoon Books.
No, yes, yes. I mean, it's like, you know, I'll take so much kibbutzing, but you've had it, buddy. Mm-hmm. There's the soliciting story was actually supposed to come much farther along in the storyline. All it was actually going to be kind of like its own graphic novel. You know, it would have been a whole novel. Mm-hmm. Would have been great. You know, there it is. You can take it or leave it. If you don't like Catholics, then, you know, you could leave it.
Or if you don't like Catholics, you can take it, too.
Yeah,
it's a spin on it.
It's whatever way you want to look at it. So I did feel kind of like, well, I'm kind of shoehorning this into a place where it doesn't quite fit.
Oh, it flowed really nicely, though, and I'm glad it was where it was, because she was a really great character.
Yeah, when I read it, it was my first time reading it, and it just, the whole book was very smooth. Like, for something that's almost 500 pages,
it was very smooth.
You don't put it down.
No.
Oh, that's not good for your eyes.
I mean, oh, me I and Robin sit around the house in the dark reading big, big books all the time.
Do that, or I sit right in front of my TV.
Oh, we should have sold it with its own flashlight so you could read it under the covers.
Well, one of the things that I noticed on your website is that you've got all these little things to go with your little castle waiting hardcover.
Well, because, you know, it's like this, it's like, ooh, now I have a book, and then it's like I had, you know, I was like, oh, I want to have all the other stuff that goes, it's all the toys, it's book toys.
Are you making toys?
Oh, don't I wish.
I would be really excited about that.
I've actually tried, I mean, I've made some, you know, like, of my own to, you know, play with. Mm-hmm. But I don't have, nobody's, you know, if Hasbro wants to do a line, then fine, they can call me and we'll discuss it.
I think Robin's heart almost stopped for a second.
Yeah, just 1 second. I'm going to start harassing Hasbro in 2 minutes.
I wish there was some way that, you know, it's like, it's just that that's something you can't do yourself. I mean, I can do stuff that's printed myself, but I haven't yet found any way. I don't have the machining capabilities to do my own toys.
Like, if you've got a friend, because, you know, as an artist, you end up meeting, you know, a sort of community of other artists. And usually that's how it works for me. It's like, hey, can you make this for me? Because I'm totally inept.
Sure. Yes, I need to. I'll start my own, like, slave labor group, you know?
No, it's a studio.
Oh, that's right, studio. Excuse me. Studio.
I've heard the stories of the Spirited Away studio. What's the name of that studio?
Ghibli,
and apparently it's like a sweatshop there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's the weirdest thing for me when you look at Japanese comics, and it's one of the things that I love about American comics is, like, we were talking about it earlier, I look at Castle Waiting, and I know that you did it all. Everything. Right? And Chris Ware, same thing. I look at Acme Novelty Library, I know he did it all. But then I'm looking at Japanese manga, and I know that it's studioized, and I'm like, well, who did the backgrounds? Who did the lettering? Who did it? But they don't tell you. It's, like, all one person.
Yeah.
Even in the book, they're talking about how their assistants helped them, and, you know, how funny their assistants are, and I'm still like, who did it?
And you want to see some, I mean, I think that's part of it, too, and at least part of the appeal of some independent comics is that it's, the personal stamp is on everything.
Yeah, sweat.
You know that, like, the person who did the backgrounds is the same person that did, everything kind of holds together, you know, it's all, like, one with itself.
It's very cosmic.
Now, Castle Waiting's fantasy, is that... I don't know if I like using the term fantasy.
Yeah, I know. Everybody does refer to it as being fantasy, although I was like, I don't read fantasy. I'm not a fantasy novel reader kind of person.
But you know what? That's interesting because neither am I. And initially I'm like, oh, a book about a, you know, weird people in a castle. I don't know. It's not really the type of thing I would normally read. Because I'm not a fantasy guy. I'm not a Dungeons and Dragons guy. You know, I'm not going to go home and, you know, stare at my Hobbit posters and stuff.
Okay, but here's a question.
Right.
Would you call, like...
I'm not done.
Sorry.
So that's the thing that really stuck me with this, is it's so not fantasy. It's that it's just a story that where the characters happen to be, you know, fantastic.
Right.
I guess.
I would never call it fantasy. I would call it fairy tale, because when you... For example, if you watch, like, Nightmare Before Christmas, or if you, you know, watch Spirited Away, what would you call those? I wouldn't call them fantasy. I would call them, like, fairy tale. You know?
There must be some way to have a different name for, you know, somebody has to come up with a new genre, I guess. Because
fairy fic.
I mean, that was also kind of the point of doing it too, is I wanted to do something where, I mean, and that is a little something else that's behind Castle Waiting, is that nothing and nobody is really as they appear. It's like nothing is quite what it seems, and not in a bad way, but it's like you could pick it up thinking, oh god, it's swords and sorcery, and then you start to read it and it's like, oh, it's not. There's like a nun with a beard, and it's kind of the same thing. I like to play with that kind of, with people's perceptions. It's like you can have the trappings and all of the sort of outward, you know, appearances of fantasy, because there's a lot of cliches in fantasy, and then just take them and just explode them, just turn them into something else.
Take the cliche away.
Yeah, it's kind of like, well, I got your cliche right here, pal. Kind of a.
So, what? Fantasy isn't your thing. What have been some influences as far as comics go? Because you're saying you got into comics involved in the late 80s, early 90s. What was it, some stuff that really stuck out to you? Like, this is great. I love comics, you know.
Love and Rockets.
Yay!
I think would probably be what I mean. I read superhero comics when I was a kid, and I did read ElfQuest, you know, when I was 13. Because at 13, man, it was great. But then so was the X-Men when I was that age, and it was just kind of like, well, at what point did actually, you know, I start, you know, thinking, it's like, wait, my mind has changed about comics. It was probably, Fantagraphics stuff, and Mobius. When I finally got old enough to, like, be able to buy a Mobius comic, I guess, it just kind of really changed the way that I thought about stories, you know? Stories and visual stories, visually told stories.
Well, Mobius's pacing is so completely different from, like, ElfQuest or X-Men.
Oh, yeah. And the feeling behind the stories is completely different.
Mm-hmm. Well, the purpose, too, right? I mean, it's just superheroes. Let's beat them up. And Mobius is kind of like...
Well, it's an art.
Yeah, it
yes.
is.
I wouldn't call X-Men
desert
art.
Desert for about 8 panels.
Well, yeah, there's a whole different... I mean, I know one thing that just fascinates me with Mobius, as well as other... I mean, there's other... the fact that he can just take a pen in his hand and sit down and draw an entire comic. Just sit down and get into that trance state. Mm-hmm. And without sitting and thinking, okay, I have to have the, you know, the whatever, the build-up and the conclusion and the blah, 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 you know, and work it out. For days in advance, he can just sit down and do it.
Wow.
And that's always been something that I've always want to achieve, to be able to get to that state.
Just that kind of free-form comic creation, I guess.
Yeah, just be able to sit down and do it. And I'm getting there.
Slowly but surely.
Slowly but surely.
It's not as easy as it looks. I mean, lots of people do those 24-hour comics, and they just fizzle out after about 6 hours.
It's always the last two pages are just stick men.
Yeah. Or black.
Yeah. What are some other projects you're working on? We're talking about Oz or some recent stuff or something that you'd like to do. You know, we talked about you'd do superheroes if you could do reinventions of the creation or the other things, or, you know, exploring the inside. What are some projects that you'd like to work on that is different from... fairy tales and Oz?
Gosh, I don't know.
I stumped it.
That's what you're here for, stumping them.
I like, you know, it's like I like history kind of thing, just different themes. I love anything historical. I love doing research.
That's
everything. I mean, this is one thing I have noticed comes up. I mean, it's in the Oz stuff and it's in Castle Waiting, is whole building societies, and especially building out the architecture and design of cities. Gosh, I don't. What
is that something?
What could that apply to? I don't know.
It's so open.
It applies to comics. I mean, there's a lot of different people that are doing stuff on architecture, and you know, one time I saw Jason Lutz. He came to town, and he did a whole thing on the architecture of Seattle and how.
Was that the slideshow that he had?
Yeah, and how like the shapes of the buildings were indicative of who was working in
them. Yes, that's awesome.
Yeah, but of course, I was totally taking it seriously, and afterwards I was like, make a comic, do something, that was fantastic, and he was like, it's not true. And I was like, oh, man.
Yeah, I noticed when I saw him give that presentation once, and I was cracking up. Mm-hmm. I was just laughing, and then I noticed that nobody else in the audience was laughing, and I thought, oh, wait, they don't get it.
Yeah. We were all maybe hoping and wishing that could truly be the case, a whole little ghetto of artists creating their own buildings.
But I think that would be cool to do, you know, to do something where it was more of, you know, how long could people actually be into that if you did something where it was just a comic about, like, living buildings, you know?
Well, the thing is about cartoon, like, people that read comics is, like, you'll find that they each have their little niche of what they like, and it's like little specific niches, there's going to be somebody that likes it, you know, like our friend Colin. Well, you know Colin Upton, he's mm-hmm. just so into like war history, and he has a lot of fans for his comics when he does that kind of stuff. So I'm sure that somebody would be interested. Well, I certainly would if somebody did a story like that about the architecture and the creative people behind it.
I love Will Eisner's epics,
yeah,
kind
like
of.
New York. Yeah, it's about cityscapes.
Wouldn't that be great if you could actually, if there was some way? I mean, this is total, you know, like science fiction. like if you could, in reality, that wherever it is that you were going to live, you could just think it, and it would look that way. You know what I mean? Or that the building would somehow take on your, like whatever it is that you're into. And that you do, the building would start looking like that.
That would be pretty cool.
That would be awesome.
Like Alan Moore's odd castle.
We need a lot of holograms, I think. Like
yes, when we would all have huge estates that we would live on.
We'd have to make more space. Maybe when we colonize Mars, that'll start over and get more into the science fiction.
All right. Life has turned into a Philip K. Dick movie.
Yeah!
Or book. I don't know, I haven't been fans of most of the movies.
I'm so excited that you can get a temporary tattoo of death. There's like merchandise for the Scanner Darkly movie. It's just ridiculous. I think Philip K. Dick would be laughing about it.
Or you think there's a plot against him.
Yeah, obviously it's a plot against him.
Okay, I think we're running close to the end of our time, because I have some stuff.
You should mention who you're talking to.
Oh, yes, Linda Medley. if you are interested in checking out Linda Medley's stuff, you have castlewaiting.com and yes. Also Fantagraphics books. Now, the Castle Waiting book was supposed to come out in June, all the solicitations I said, but it actually like came out, what, May, April?
Yeah, the advanced copies were coming out mid-May, and it actually came out on my birthday.
Aww.
So it was like, hey, or shipped to comic stores, mm-hmm. Which I thought was kind of significant, because like I said, I started it on my birthday in 94,
wow.
And then having it come out again on a birthday was, you know,
it's appropriate.
It was cosmic.
Yeah.
A cosmic connection.
Now, is Castle Waiting, Fantagraphics is being really diligent about getting their books into bookstores, and that's going to be the same with Castle Waiting?
Yeah, as far as I know, they're really pushing it that way.
Well, you went to the big book expo in D.C., if I'm right.
And yeah, that was eye-opening.
And, like, sold all the copies of Castle Waiting that you guys brought.
Well, it wasn't selling, because they don't sell there, but it was, you know, people coming up and getting books signed. You know, they'd come and get signed, and we ran out of them. And I guess that doesn't happen all that, you know, to everybody. It's like you could be putting out the new Harlequin romance novel. We were right next to Harlequin, by the way. And like maybe nobody would come up and want your book. I mean, how sad is that?
Yikes. So, I was going to say that I thought that Castle Waiting would be like a perfect addition to any library. So I'm not surprised that lots
yes,
of
a lot of librarians came by. A lot of librarians.
Will you be doing the San Diego this year?
Yes, I am. I'm going to San Diego.
Would it almost be this year's big book that people should buy?
Oh,
it seems each
course.
Year there's a different big book. Like there's Blankets one year,
yeah.
The Big Bone book another year. I think Castle Waiting's this year's
Castle
big book.
So
yes, they can come and I'll bring some of my book toys, my book accessories. They can dude up their books.
Sweet. Who else can do that? I got the new Acme Novelty Library. What are you going to do for me, Chris Ware?
Nothing.
Exactly.
It's done.
I'll challenge Chris.
So all of a sudden there'll be this big war between Linda and Chris.
Oh, no.
Turn out more and more stuff.
Oh, no, he might cry.
Oh, okay.
Chris is very nice.
Hey, but you know what? I don't remember if you answered my question about new Castle Waiting. I think we got sidetracked.
What did I say?
There's the new issue by Fantagraphics.
Yes, there is.
The question was like, are you going to do more?
There is going to be, the series is starting up. We're supposed to have the first new issue at San Diego.
Awesome.
The first new number one. And that actually has, we're reprinting like those two lost issues, the two issues that come in between the new stuff and the end of the collection.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's supposed to be, I think, every 6 weeks afterwards, we'll have a new issue. And I'm currently right now working on page 122 of what will be the next, you know, the next collection.
Awesome.
So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. Because like I said, I do have to, I would love to be able to just do it regularly. I don't know that I can afford to do it, you know, exclusively.
Does Fantagraphics provide more openings as far as people going, oh, it's Fantagraphics, I'll check it out?
I think it does. I think people that, you know, because Fantagraphics fans, you know, I think they tend to stick with a certain type of book, and I think most of them were a little shocked that they were going to publish.
That's the thing is, this is actually quite different from the current stuff coming out from Fantagraphics. I mean, I found recently that Fantagraphics is really putting out some really solid work, and this is extremely solid work, but it's completely different from all the other stuff. The other stuff is,
well,
you know,
I mean,
very,
yeah,
alternative, Love and Rock, but even like
so
the new
different
stuff, like
that's
the Jordan
true
Crane stuff, the Joe Daly stuff, like all
the
this stuff.
The way I look at it, though, is that it's good. And to me, I've always felt that Fantagraphics just publishes what's good. You know what I mean? It's like, that's why people go, oh, it's Fantagraphics, well, I'll buy it, because they know that it's like a name brand they can rely on.
Name brand in comics.
Well, that's definitely one way to look at it. I know that, I think maybe, I know there was a lot of, I mean, all the whole time that I was working on it, I had people always coming up to me and saying, you know, I would not even pick up this book in the store. There's no way. I mean, it's just, it just looked like, you know, and then fill in the blank, whatever cliche they thought that it was. And then somebody forced them to look at it, or they were just so bored they had nothing else to read, and said, I didn't realize that this was a story that I actually could get into.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it's, to me, it's like, I want to open up the narrow minds. And if people think, oh boy, people who love to claim that they're liberal but aren't really, you know, it's like, how liberal are you? How open-minded are you, really?
The book separates the men from the boys.
Yeah, it's like, you know, let's see how open-minded you really are, that you can, you know, that you can go into a comic book store and, you know, walk up to the counter with a book that, you know, was done by a woman and looks like a fantasy novel, you know. How brave are you?
Before we go, I just wanted to add, you did a piece in one, and it's in the Castle Waiting book, but it was actually, I think it was one of the trilogy tour books initially,
mm-hmm.
where it was the nun and the demon character. And the demon character was like, I can get you anything you want. I can do anything you want me to do. You just have to tell me what it is. And then I think he wants her soul, and because he was trying to get the boy's soul,
right,
who was fishing. And I think that was a really amazing, clever piece of work, because the punchline, of course, is when he finally shows up at the end of the night. Okay, what can I get for you? You know, because I can get anything. And she's just like, get lost. That was like the best line ever. And I think that's probably my favorite written part of Castle Waiting. It's very clever.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it.
So any chance you'll come up to Vancouver for a signing one day?
Oh, yeah. If somebody can get me up there, I'll go. I like Vancouver. I want to see I want to go up and go to the Provincial Museum again.
Oh, that's in Victoria.
Yeah,
I haven't been to that.
But it's on the... Oh, wait, you're on the other... Which Vancouver are you in?
We're in the city, not the island.
Okay.
Not Vancouver, Washington. that's just over the bridge.
That's probably not that far of a drive, right?
Yeah. No. We're very close to Portland. I've made that trek before. It's a nice trek.
I'm just lazy. I don't leave Vancouver very often.
So Robin wanted to know, what was it about Portland that made you move there? Because it seems like everybody in the comic book world is relocating to Portland.
There wasn't that many people. When I moved here, the place I was previously, I was just north of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to move back to San Francisco, but I wanted to move back into a city at the time. And, human beings couldn't live in, there was no way any human being could afford to live in San Francisco.
Yeah.
You know, five, six years ago.
That's becoming Vancouver at this point.
Yeah, I was going to say
that. It's very expensive here.
Yeah,
that's why I'm relocating to Montreal.
The land of poutine. Well, thank you very much, Linda.
Okay.
I look forward to the next Castle Waiting book, which I think will be out within the month.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Because San Diego's on the 22nd or on the 20th. Somewhere around there. I'll be
towards
up here.
End.
A big crowded, what is it? It's a airplane hangar, a stadium, something.
Yeah, several airplane hangars together.
Badness.
It's, you know what? It's a bitch to do interviews in them because I had to take the people outside because the din was so loud.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's the building of madness.
So it's like I'll be doing an interview and all of a sudden you hear like a seagull in the background. And like,
that might be kind of fun to get samples here for interviews. Okay, thank you, Linda. And I will send you an email of when we have this up for downloading.
Okey-doke.
So you can let your folks know. And I really appreciate you coming on and joining us. I will end the show with the Tom Waits Fawn. Actually, that's a question. We did talk about Tom Waits, didn't we?
And we should say keep up the good work.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Keep doing the good fables, or not fables. Fairy tales.
Slice.
It's bound to happen.
keep being the original. Yeah,
there we go.
Being the original.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks. For saying that.
Okay. Bye. That was Linda Medley from Castle Waiting. Awesome book.
It's really literally for all ages. Little kids are going to want to color in it. It's a fantastic book for everybody. Your mom can read it. Your dad will like it. You know, your little brother will find stuff about it interesting. And then you yourself, no matter what sex, age, or race, will probably enjoy it quite a bit.
So I just want, the reason I ended, normally I go pretty much right till the end of the hour with the interviews. I just wanted to yak with Robin for a bit. Robin is moving to Montreal tomorrow.
Yep, getting on the plane at 5 in the afternoon.
I'm leaving on a jet plane.
We're out of here.
So, what's in the future for the fish?
Well, I'm definitely going to try and get a radio show out of McGill. It shouldn't be too hard. I come with good references. And let's see.
Unless people listen to you showing up late like today.
Yeah.
Snap.
Thanks. Anyways, the other thing too is I was going to try and see if I could sort of worm my way into CBC and hope maybe, I don't know, we'll try. I'm going to try. That's the best I can say is I'm going to try. But I have a lot to offer and I kind of want to offer it to the Canadian public as far as comic book knowledge goes. So.
You go, girl.
Yeah,
you
I don't go. Know what the call sign is for Montreal's McGill University, but the thing is I have a live journal now. So, like everybody else, I've reached the modern age, and I figure if you are really interested in finding out about more about my show in the future, then just go to my live journal, which is onomatopoeiagirl, @livejournal.com. So, if you don't know how to spell onomatopoeia, let me teach you, because I am a horrible, horrible speller, and onomatopoeia is one of those words that is a really hard word to spell. It's also phonetic, so the way that I learned it was this. Ono, O-N-O, mato, M-A-T-O, po, as in Edgar Allan, P-O-E, and ia, I-A. Ono, mato, po, ia is how I taught myself how to spell onomatopoeia. So, anyways, again, onomatopoeia, girl, G-R-L, I keep saying at, but it's livejournal.com.
We've just been informed
awesome.
McGill is C-cut.
It's C-cut. C-K-U-T. Go to www.ckut.ca. Yeah, but I have all of August to or July to put that show together, so maybe by August I'll have it up and running. But I'll be updating my live journal every week because I have lots of friends and fans that are probably wanting to know what comics I'm still reading that are good.
That are
like
good.
Castle Waiting.
And what comics
you're
reading.
If you don't have Castle Waiting yet, go get it.
And what comics you're reading that are crap.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. I don't read any more crap anymore. I'm so lucky. I've worked in comic book stores for so long. I can just, you know, go and read my comics and then sell comics and do my job and everything's
so
good.
What are you going to do now that you don't work
at a comic
store?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I've been weaning myself off of, like, Batman and
Superman. And the new Batman's been awesome.
And I, like, trying to cut myself off of these superhero comics, and I've actually not been able to make the cut for Marvel because I'm quite enjoying that Civil War stuff.
You suck.
I don't suck. I'm just a big
nerd. Let me say it here first. Ink studs say Civil War sucks.
I'm a big nerd. No. You know, it's not fair for you to make people feel bad if they like superhero comics.
I'm not making. I'm just making you feel bad.
Oh, well,
no
you
one
make
else.
Me feel bad all the time. I don't care.
Because,
you know, guys like Ashley Wood and James Kolchalka, one of your future guests, have done Marvel Comics.
Yeah,
and Pete Bagg, another future guest, has done Marvel Comics.
Yeah, you want to talk about Pete Bagg and Marvel Comics. We'll get there later.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to do a quick rundown of my next month's guests. I have a lot of guests coming up. It's going to be a pretty good month for the next month and a half. Next week is going to be Fred Grissom and Jamie D. Galley, creators of Filth Hole, Hate Song. Jamie and Fred do Filth Hole together. Got a lot of press out. Warren Ellis loves it.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Warren Ellis posts on their site, and they got like fucking million hits or something. Oh, I shouldn't have said that last word. Viewer discretion is advised. Hate Song is awesome. Fred Grissom.
I love Hate Song so much. I'm so jealous. He wouldn't come on my show. And I'm a girl. You think he'd be more inclined to come on my show?
What the hell is that supposed to mean?
I'm hotter.
Whatever.
Metalheads like me. Anyways.
Okay.
Who's next?
Pete Bagg.
Awesome.
July 13th. July 20th, we're doing a retrospective on George Harriman and Crazy Cat with special guest by phone, Jeet here, who is working on his PhD about something to do with a little orphan Annie.
Oh, okay.
He's knowledgeable of the old comics.
Sweet.
July 27th will be Gareth Guiden. I don't even know if
that's...
It's something. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your name, Gareth. We will get it right on the 27th. He's creator of the Magic Teeth Daily. He's doing a comic for the rest of his life, every day.
Yeah, and he does this great thing called the Pierogi Cats, and I had one of the buttons at daycare, and all the children wanted to know stories about Pierogi Cat. And also, you should mention that he is the proprietor of Legends Comics on Vancouver Island, which is at Victoria,
the only good
awesome
comic store in on the
totally
island.
Yeah, it's totally awesome.
And after that, we got Abby Denson, who's coming to town to do a signing at Sophia's Books on August the 3rd for her new book, Tough Love, High School Confidential, about a young girl coming out of the closet in high school. August 10th, James Kolchalka. We're going to have Jonathan
Craft
Bennett.
Craft is the enemy.
Yeah, Craft's the enemy. James Kolchalka. It's James Kolchalka. Monkey I don't really need
robot
to say much more. Monkey versus Robot!
Peanut Butter and Jeremy.
Peanut Butter and Jeremy.
Thanks for having me on the show, Robin.
Thanks for coming, Robin Fisher. I'm gonna do one thing for you before.
Really?
Yeah. One last thing
thank
before
you.
Robin Fisher goes.
Thank you.
I'm gonna end with "Fawn" by Tom Waits off the Alice album, as per request by Ms. or Mrs.
I have no idea.
By Linda Medley.
By Lady Linda.
And thank you very much for coming on, Linda. That was awesome. I'm a big fan, and I look forward to more of your crafty work.
Moi aussi.
What?
I'm practicing my French. Me too.
Okay.
It's French for me too.
Yeah, poutine.